Hello, this is Miss O'Neill and Mr. Kingscote, and we're going to do Lord of the Flies.
Okay, so to start us off, we're going to talk about a little bit of the context of the novel, just briefly. And I think Lord of the Flies is often seen as Golding being a commentator on society at the time. But of course, that very essence of this novel came from Golding being a schoolteacher and walking away from his classroom one day and watching the class of children beneath him just descend into savagery while he was out of the room, which inspired him to go on and write this particular novel. So while it is of course a mirror to society, it really is based in school, pretty much like my year 11s every time I leave the room there as well.
So you've got these four main boys who are very, very different. We've got Ralph, who although he is a leader, he wants to be a fair leader. We've got Piggy, who values law and order and fairness. Then we've got Jack, who's quite dominating and almost alludes to this sort of fascist leader. And then we've got Simon, who seems to be quite insightful and is almost presented as this Jesus-like martyr figure, who again kind of sees right through the boys and sees the honesty and truth to their situation.
Yeah, so it's perhaps no surprise really that Simon is kind of sacrificed in the way that he is. You know, his ethereal kind of power and the way that he is eventually seen as different to the group and is lost and has to be discovered again. It does set him apart. Whereas Ralph and Jack at the beginning of the novel are actually, they initially start as quite similar and then start to grow apart, and you see how different each of them is and how each of their visions for what is important on the island is different too.
Mm. And Golding uses symbols to portray that throughout. So to begin with, we've got the conch and the fire, and they both symbolise civilisation and law and order and democracy. Whereas the fire can also be chaotic and create disaster, and when the conch shatters, it's symbolic of their democracy falling apart and unravelling, and the characters are linked to those symbols. So Ralph is obsessed with the fire, keeping the fire going, keeping order and keeping aflame that hope of getting rescued. Whereas Piggy is very close to the conch, he cradles it and he is almost obsessed with it. And it's him and Jack kind of fighting that ends up destroying the conch, because Jack can't accept the type of democracy that Piggy wants.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Piggy's character is such a tragic one, and really, you know, this kind of desperately unfit asthmatic boy on an island where, you know, fitness is prized amongst anything else. And despite his, you know, logical approach to everything, Piggy is undermined throughout by some, you know, barbed, nasty comments from the other boys. And so you're right, you know, the conscience is there, and it's his kind of attempt to, you know, have a voice. And actually, it's another symbol that really really symbolises Piggy a little bit more, which is actually his glasses. And they become inadvertently more important to survival on the island than the conch does, and ultimately cost Piggy his life as well.
It links back to war, I suppose. As you say, you need to be physically strong, you need to be dominant, you need to take charge and have a voice. And when Piggy doesn't have that, he loses. And I think that's what Golding was trying to show us through the mask. So there's the quote, "The mask was a thing of its own behind which Jack hid." Jack is strong and dominant without the mask, but once he takes on this costume, like a soldier would in war, it gives him this newfound anonymity and a form of strength, because he doesn't feel that he has to own up for his actions. He feels anonymous.
I think you're absolutely right. You're right, it is survival of the fittest. And that is very telling, you know. He's already a powerful character, but, you know, the mask that he puts him on absolves him of the responsibility for his actions. You know, even in his own eyes, I think he feels, you know, admonished of responsibility. So that's, you know, quite something there, actually. And that links also, you know, to another quote, you know, it says, maybe there is a beast, maybe it's us. And that, you know, that's a reflection of really, you know, this beast is this mythical thing that exists on the island. It's not real at all. Really, what they're afraid of is what they might become, I suppose. And the savagery in their character that becomes exposed the longer they're there. The divide that falls between the two different camps on the islands. The beast that lies within is surely more frightening than anything that they are yet to discover.
It's quite insightful of Simon to see that. Because again, in war, we tend to blame the enemy, fight the enemy, and Simon sees that really, at the end of the day, there is savagery within all of us. Whereas the boys were too busy wondering about a real beast, which obviously ends up to just be a man, a dead corpse floating down because his parachutes come loose.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in looking at that quote, you know, presuming in on the word beast, you know, that has the implications of something mysterious, something terrifying, something mythical, something that is, you know, somehow threatening. And of course, you know, all of those things lie within the children themselves. So there's the kind of the irony of the situation. And, you know, looking at the bigger picture, of course, when they later say, we did everything that adults would do, what went wrong? Again, it's that question, isn't it? You know, have they done anything differently? Or actually, is Goulding's reflection of us so bad that, you know, we are seeing that this is just the way that adults behave, but it's just in a more civilised kind of frame, really?
And when they all gather in to the pig and to Simon, and they're chanting, kill the pig, cut her throat, spill her blood, it seems almost childlike, as if they're role-playing war and essentially committing murder, just like adults do.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, and that kind of, you know, that rhythmic kind of chanting that they have there, it's almost tribal, isn't it? Which, you know, takes them back to, you know, it regresses kind of manhood or mankind, really, to an earlier time when, you know, there was this, you know, savagery there. And that's what, you know, the whole novel regresses them through to the savagery, really.
Because if we zoomed in on the verbs kill, cut, spill, it is quite grotesque graphic imagery to show that.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, even, you know, that kind of meter of the rhythm that comes with it, you know, it's, you know, keeps them in pace, it marches them, and you could say that meter is also like a military kind of beat, you know, it's hammering on a drum as they walk march in, with that chant going before them, really.
So we've got themes of savagery and civilization, we've got democracy, and we've got childhood through those key quotes, through those key symbols.
Yeah.
And it all links back to what you were saying at the start, Mr. Kingscote, about the fact that he was a teacher, he left the room, and the children became a savage, and order unravelled, essentially.
Absolutely, yeah. The idea that, you know, the children are able to create their own sense of democracy is, you know, completely debunked in this novel. Mm. You know, that savagery versus civilization, is one tribe a savage? Is one, do they have their, you know, their own kind of guidelines? You know, is that really a reflection of what happens in our classrooms today?